Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
You probably have been told to breathe a certain way when you exercise. Inhale here, exhale here, push through, brace your core. But what if the way you've been taught to breathe during movement is actually working against your body? What if it's increasing pressure, limiting mobility, and even contributing to your pain? And so today we're talking about exactly that, breathing. Specifically, how we've been taught to breathe during exercise, movement, and effort, and why that might be one of the biggest reasons people stay tight, restricted, and in pain. I'm joined again by Jeff Bailey. He's the founder of Avita Yoga and author of Mobility for Life, Healthy Joints, Strong Bones, and a Peaceful Mind. And Jeff's work focuses on restoring joint health through specific movement patterns. And breathing is a really, really large part of that. And that's exactly what we're going to get into today. Jeff, it's really great to see you again. How have you been doing?
Hey, Lisa. Thanks. Yeah, great to be here. I've been doing great.
Good, good. So this is such an interesting topic. This is like buzzing all around the world right now, is breathing, breath work. And as you know, I do yoga every day and I'm taught to breathe a certain way. So I'd love to ask you, most people think that they're breathing correctly, especially during exercise, because the coach or leader, whoever, the yoga instructor is telling them to breathe in and breathe out. But you have a different theory. So what have we been taught about breathing and where do you think that has gone wrong?
Yeah, well, we've been taught that more is better. That's the moment the idea of more is better comes into your mind is the exact moment we were taught wrong, especially when it comes to breath. More is not better when it comes to good, sound, fundamental health and happiness. And, in the fitness world, we get caught up in more almost instantaneously. More muscle, more mass, more this, more that.
Push harder, run faster. You got through. This.
Yeah, exactly. And what that tends to do, as we talked about yesterday, it kind of keeps us at the level of the muscles. When if we slow down and let less be more, then we can drop into the level of bones and joints where the problems often originate. And we can make a world difference working from the deepest layers out. But what's deeper than the bones and joints? The nervous system. And we could even say the breath is deeper than the bones and joints. The respiration happens at the cellular level. Okay, this is such a big topic, and we're going to hit on, I guess, as much of it as we can here in the next hour or so. First of all, I want to say that this practice came to me, Avita Yoga came to me over many years of questioning yoga, now about 45 years. And what I've learned in my life, it's not so much the answers we get that are important to us, it's the questions we ask. And we hold these questions in our hearts and just kind of wait for answers to come. And that's how this whole thing has happened for me. This beautiful concept around breathing to my wife, who is a retired dentist, and she took her dentistry to extraordinary levels. She did a lot of full mouth restoration, did an enormous amount of continuing education. She was a teacher of dentists around the world. And at one of the conferences, I used to go to these conferences with her occasionally. I learned a lot about the air and breathing and occlusion, and all that plays a big role, not just in our breathing, but in neck and upper back health, headaches, vertigo, things like that. But at one of these conferences, she ended up introducing a guy named Patrick McEwen. And maybe you've heard of Patrick McEwen, studied with Dr. Buteyko, who was a Ukrainian scientist many, many years ago, tasked with finding a way to get astronauts into space using far less oxygen. That was his goal. How do we consume less oxygen in space? Well, along the way, he studied yogic concepts. He studied pranayama concepts. But he noticed, working in hospital settings, he noticed that unhealthy people come into the settings breathing out rapidly and through the mouth. So he started, he was a questioner. He's like, okay, let's work backwards from that. If breathing rapidly in and out of the mouth is a sign of ill health, what could we do to improve health? So For starters, and this is how I keep breath at the very beginning stages of this practice, very, very simple. And my instructions throughout the practice is simply this: relax your jaw, let your lips be together, and breathe softly in and out of your nose. That's it. That's the that's the breathing instruction, until in some of the later classes and later series, I start to introduce some deeper concepts, but always we breathe in and out of the nose. Now, Lisa, you could go practice, if this was the end of our talk and you just dedicated the rest of your life to breathing only through your nose, then you would be leaps and bounds ahead of most of the population in terms of your respiratory health, cardiorespiratory health. It's one of the two leading indicators of longevity. The second one is grip strength. And that could be another really good topic for us down the road. Let me stop there. I have more to say, but what's on your heart? What's on your mind right now?
So funny that you just stopped there for a second, because I was like, oh, I want to jump in and ask him. So, I mean, I've been taught to breathe in deeply, in and out through the nose, in yogic practices, like with intention. So breathing in and breathing out with that ocean-like wave breath, and that's in yoga. But when I take yoga out of it, there's these breathwork practices that are becoming really popular right now, which include something called the circular breath, the Wim Hof method. And a lot of that includes open mouth breathing. So what they've said is that you get, you know, more oxygen in your, or more air in the body to release. So can you talk to us about why breathing through the nose matters? Because that really stuck out for me.
Okay. So just to be clear on what you said, you're saying that you exhale through the mouth in order to do what? Why do you do that?
So those are breathwork practices. So in breathwork practices, I guess that's not really on topic though, because I'm thinking of like a breathwork session. So circular breathing for 20 minutes to release stress in the body. And so breathing through the mouth just to get the maximum amount of air in, I've been told that that is okay. But what you're saying is breathing through the nose is better for you.
Yeah, it's far better. I'm really familiar with the inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where do I start with this? Let me start with some really fundamental elements about the nose. Okay, why do we breathe through the nose? Number one, there are these little tiny cells in the back of the pharynx that produce a gas called nitric oxide. That is a gas that when you breathe through the nose, those little cells get stimulated and they produce nitric oxide. What does nitric oxide do? It helps facilitate the exchange of gases in the lungs and even at a cellular level. It's an important sort of unknown gas that gets mixed in with each inhale. And that's on the inhale. Okay. Why else would we want to breathe only through the nose? Well, the nose is a smaller opening. So you get less air going in through the nose. You exhale slower going out through the nose. The moment you start breathing only through the nose, and there is that pranayamic exercise where you plug one nostril and breathe only through one side, that's even less air going in and out. What happens when we breathe less? The nervous system freaks out, right? The instant there's a hunger for air, the nervous system freaks out. And that, okay, we could say that's a life preservation system that's just built in. Get more air quickly. In the immediate short term, it works very well to keep us alive. But if we rely on it as a way of living, the exchange of gases and the metabolism that happens at the cellular level gets out of whack, and lactic acid is produced and it makes our muscles stiff and sore and things like that. Free radicals can start to form as well. Here's why we benefit immensely by slowly and steadily conditioning ourselves to breathe less. Let me ask you a question. Do you know what it is inside us that triggers the need to inhale, to take the next breath? You would just think, okay, it's such a natural thing. But the trigger to inhale is a buildup of carbon dioxide. So when carbon dioxide builds up, it triggers us to take an inhale. If we just keep doing that, if we let that system be totally in charge, our threshold for CO2 gets lower and lower. and the need to breathe gets faster and faster and faster. Here's a fundamental element of breathing, the physiology of breathing. The higher our threshold for CO2 is, the more efficient the exchange of gases and the metabolic processes are throughout the body. Okay? So if we just breathe out the mouth, we're blowing off carbon dioxide. It feels good. There's this big psychological release that comes with the exhale. But every time you do that, and if it becomes a consistent practice, your tolerance for CO2 levels in your body gets weaker and weaker and weaker. But as I reverse that process and breathe only through my nose and actually learn to exercise or even just walk up a flight of stairs with a slight hunger for air, now the entire physiology starts to adjust to that. Everything starts to change. And what changes is the chemistry and the physiology at the level of the cells. It sounds crazy, but it works. And the whole idea is to slowly and steadily increase the threshold for CO2 in your system. Everything gets more efficient as we do so.
It's interesting because when I feel like when I'm super stressed out or anxious, I feel like my body stops breathing altogether. So how would that relate to breathing? Like if you're saying that's actually good, is that my body preserving the oxygen levels or why would I stop breathing when I'm stressed? And then people typically say, oh my God, you have to breathe, right? Like as soon as someone is distressed, they get told to take deep breaths.
Because psychologically, it feels good. Psychologically, it feels better. It's a quick fix is what it is. And quick fixes are quick fixes. They're not long, sustainable reorganizations. And that's what we want is a long reorganization that just stays with us so that we don't get stressed out. If you're walking that fine line and you have this low tolerance or for CO2 and a high need for big breath, you're always going to be on edge. It is activating to the system. Oh, and then I just can't wait to get my next big exhale or my next big sigh, my next big this or that. And then we start to actually feel this addiction to exercise routines where we just kind of facilitate that whole sort of dysfunctional cycle, thinking that we're doing a lot of good stuff. And yes, you walk out feeling good. You feel good kind of in the short term, but then all of a sudden there you are again, back in the need for it. And so I understand this breathing paradigm quite well. I've been applying it to my life now for over 15 years. I've felt the effects of it day to day. My stress levels are very, very low. I have good oxygenation levels in my blood. I can exercise calmly. I can go on hikes. I can even go downhill skiing and breathe only through my nose. If you just imagine the difference of like we live here on open space in Boulder and I can go up on the trails behind my house and I'll just go for a walk, breathing through my nose, nice, calm, beautiful day. But these runners come by me just panting almost and exhausted. And it's usually not a picture of health. And so it's this beautiful, beautiful thing that ties in so intimately with the Vita Yoga, where we actually get to slow down, benefit on so many different levels within, go deep to the bones and joints, and really genuinely work from the inside out. And the muscles just come along for the ride. The muscles just tone, they become more resilient, more supple, just as a product of working with the bones and joints and working with the breath in this way. That enhances the cellular respiration at a very, very deep level. Your cells end up working better and getting a lot more oxygen in the end.
So then how does breathing affect pressure inside the joints and the tissues?
Well, there is no direct correlation. Breathing, whether I take a big breath or a shallow breath, there's no correlation to how I breathe with joint health. It's just that yoga is not just a practice for physical health. It is a practice for mental and emotional and spiritual health. And it's why I have a chapter dedicated in my book. The chapter is called Quiet Breath, Quiet Mind. And it works beautifully together. And I know, Lisa, I know, and I've heard it what you said earlier, I've heard it from many people, Jeff, I just need this big exhale. I need this big sigh. I need to yawn. I need to have these big audible exhales out my mouth in order to trigger the vagus nerve and get this parasympathetic response. Okay, yes, you will, but the results will be very temporary versus very, very gently. Like in this moment, you know, you could lie down, put your head on a pillow, put your legs up on the wall and flex your ankle. I mean, that's a very rudimentary approach into a Navita yoga shake. You're doing some work with your leg, your eyes are closed, you're breathing only through your mouth, you're doing a mild amount of work, but it's enough work where you might want to breathe a little bit harder, but we don't. We keep it easy, we keep it slow. The cue is if you ever need to breathe out your mouth, you are working way too hard. And I would say that's true no matter what you're doing, whether you're doing a Vita yoga or you're riding your bicycle. You are completely violating the fundamentals of really healthy breathing physiology by breathing in and out of the mouth. Okay, so now I got to go for a bike ride, breathe only through my mouth. All of a sudden, if I've been riding my bike and panting in and out of my mouth all these years, guess what? I got to slow down. I got to go slower. And I, in a way, I got to start all over and breathe through the nose. And it's not just, I don't want to pant through my nose. That doesn't work. Calm breath, calm mind, peaceful and present. And initially, 15 years ago, I remember when I started to make this change, I had to slow down because I used to race bicycles. I had to slow down and I got to where I could ride pretty fast and breathe heavily through my nose. And I realized, wait a minute, that's not really achieving the results. So I slowed down even more. I traded competition for pure pleasure and enjoyment and health. You're much less likely to injure yourself if you slow down and work at this level. The results are extraordinary for those who are willing to experiment with it.
I want to ask you about the results, but I do know so many people feel that if they're not breathing heavily, that they're not exerting themselves hard enough to get a real workout. Like there's been men exactly. who have come into yoga class and who have said, you know, this isn't invigorating enough for me, right? Like they want that yeah. like extreme push and that breath to feel like, I guess psychologically people feel like they're working out hard if their breath and heart rate is up, right? And so that makes them feel like they're accomplishing something. So what results did you see and what results would someone see if they truly slowed down and became more intentional with the way that they're breathing?
Yeah, no, I get it. That's the whole thing about more is better, and that we've equated the intensity that you mentioned, the increased heart rate, increase this, increase that equals health. But when we slow down, and I know it is just not popular to do this. The physiology is there. The physiology actually lives in, I always want to say the Krebs cycle, but it's not the Krebs cycle. It's the Bohr effect. The Bohr effect can, a scientist named Bohr is the one that discovered this. And there's YouTube videos. All the science is there. There's loads of science that supports this. It's just that we've been conditioned to think otherwise. And yeah, in the short term, you can build yourself up and you can build your muscle and puff yourself up with more breath. It's just not sustainable. If you want sustainable results that are going to really last into your, I'm talking 70s, really work for you for a lifetime. That's why the book is called Mobility for Life. We have to practice in a sustainable manner today. Because no one in their 70s, 80s, 90s is going to practice with that intensity. Yes, there's a handful, a small, small percentage that can, but they have they were born with the ability to do that. They have a constitution that will allow that. But most of us, many, 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 the vast majority of people dislike exercise because of these things. And so they don't exercise because they can't exercise the way we've been taught to do it. And I'm here to say, less is more, folks. Can you put your head on a pillow and put your legs up on the wall and follow along and do some of these kind movements, some of them passive, some of them very, very active, and close your eyes and watch your mind, watch your nervous system, watch yourself get a little bit, maybe a little bit anxious. That's the yoga. Instead of rapidly exhaling to make yourself feel better temporarily, let's follow that impulse in. Let's go in, and use it as a moment to get to the source of why is that anxiety even coming up in the first place? We want to resolve the inner conflict. That is our yoga.
Yeah, I definitely agree that when you slow down, like people are taught or instinctually, people tend to run or keep themselves super busy when they feel any type of discomfort or dis-ease in the body. So for example, I'm guilty of this. I used to handle anxiety by doing more. Okay, I'm going to distract myself so I don't feel anxiety anymore. But all that did was amplify the anxiety. And so by doing more and it pushing through and ignoring the anxiety made me more anxious. And so it was until I learned how to sit still and sit with it and actually, you know, analyze it and say, why, where's this coming from? Why am I feeling this way? Writing it down, getting those thoughts out, you know, vocalizing it. But it was in that slowing down that I learned how to manage it and work through it versus, you know, keep going. It'll go away if you just ignore it. It's like chasing your tail. It's not going to go away until you face it. But it's not something that a lot of people are trained to do and like to do because it's not comfortable. It can be incredibly challenging and really, really hard to face. It's like putting on boxing gloves and fighting your demons, but that's the only way through. So I agree with you in the slowing down sense for sure.
You nailed it. Yeah, you said that so beautifully. Plus you said it from personal experience. That's it. We have to slow down. Otherwise, if we'll wake up one day and we realize we're running from ourselves, literally. We go to the gym and we, you know, whether you're running, riding a bike or pushing weights around, okay, we could say it's one notch better than going to the bar and having a drink or looking for drugs or, you know, there's lots of outlets for anxiety and guilt and fear and the inner demons. And we could say, well, going for a run and going to the gym is one of the better substitutes. But let's let that be a segue. Let's let that be a springboard for slowing down, like you mentioned. And that's what I love about Avita Yoga is like a lot of people have a hard time with a sitting meditation practice. Avita is slow. It's deep. It's very, very specific and deliberate. But we do move. And that's pretty nice because in the last episode, we talked about healing sensation. And as you drop into the bones and joints, you tap into healing sensation. And all of a sudden, your mind is so joined with what you're doing. A minute and a half can fly by. A lot of my students will say, even after an entire hour-long class, they'll just say, wow, where did time go? That went by so quickly. It's because we're so present with ourselves and we're present with fear thoughts, the guilt thoughts, the blames, the judgments, the grievances. They are all welcome in the practice. And as they come up, we don't push them back down. We let them up. And I talk a lot about this in the book as well. Ultimately, our shapes, the shapes that we do and the sensation that they bring, and even as we slow the breath down a little bit and breathe only through the nose, all that is very, very gentle. It's very kind, but it's slow enough, and yet there's enough movement that it's very tolerable. Stuff that needs to be resolved moment by moment is the very stuff that comes up. And it's just a beautiful process. It's a beautiful undoing. To me, yoga at its very best is an undoing, not something that we do or try to get better at. The moment we try to get better at yoga is the moment we just lost its purpose.
Yeah, I think that misconception that you have to achieve, or I'll be good at yoga when I can do the splits, or I'll be good at yoga, you know, when I can hold these, I don't know, wheel pose, you know, stuff like that. But I agree, the point of yoga is to quiet the mind and to be able to work through those emotions that are deep inside of us that most people run from. You know, I think it's really sad, but not a lot of people can even look themselves in the eye in the mirror, you know, and to slow down enough to look themselves in the mirror because it's such a trigger for people. And so if more people, you know, knew about stuff like this, then they'd be able to just have more peace in their life. And I think it's so important, especially this time in the world where it's chaotic. There's so much uncertainty. Like, I don't know one person who's not struggling right now with something. Like, I literally just was at a class and so many people are stopping me to say that they're struggling. And really it's a matter of like, we have the answer within our bodies, right? Like the body is so smart and the body knows what to do, but we need to learn how to listen. And that's what I like about what you're saying is This gives us the ability to sit in stillness and quiet and listen and get to know ourselves. Because most people aren't really aware of their bodies and their systems and how it works. So to develop that awareness is so key.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Yeah, and you nailed it. We have a hard time looking ourselves in the mirror, let alone a brother or a sister in the eye, you know, and that's pretty cool that you're, you know, that people are sharing with you, like, I'm stressed, I don't know what to do. And there's nothing more fulfilling than being there for a brother or sister who's asking for help, you know, and we may not have the answer, but we can certainly join in the desire and the endeavor for inner peace, because it's within is the only place we're ever, ever going to find it. And I would surmise it's not so much the body that has the intelligence. It's not so much the body that has the answers. I think of the body as a vehicle. And yes, it remembers everything. It has every trauma, every bit of my entire history and past, maybe not just this life, but previous ones. It's all in there. And so there's not a lot of intelligence in that. It just has a very strong memory that in a way keeps pulling us out of our peaceful self. If it's not the world pulling us out of peaceful self, then it's the body and the aches and pains and the history that it keeps reminding us of that pulls us out. And so I find it very, very helpful to change the perspective and say, no, my body doesn't have the answers, but it is the vehicle that's going to show me my restrictions and show me my limitations. And as long as I don't try to get better at anything, if I just slow down, come into a shape, like I might just sit cross-legged, you know, Sukhasana, I have probably a dozen different variations on Sukhasana that are remarkably healing for the hips and the low back and things like that. You come into a shape, do a little movement, resonate with the restriction instead of trying to move around it or get upset at it or blame it or attack it or get rid of it, and then let it speak to us. Now I'm saying, what does my body have to show me? What does it have to tell me about my mind? And now you may get the memory. You may get the trauma that comes up that you've completely forgotten, all of a sudden comes up. But guess what, Lisa? That trauma must come up if I ever want to know my peaceful self. Because the ego loves having the issues just below the surface. It wants lots of issues out of sight. They're troublesome. They're troublesome, but I have no idea really what they are. So that's why we want to specifically identify with the restrictions and obstacles. You know, that's the Yoga Sutra 1.2. Yoga, there's Atta Yoga Anushasanam, right? Which is yoga is the awareness of the blockages, awarenesses of the resistance to the healed mind. That's 1.2. And 1.1 is yoga is now. And so we want to identify those blockages, let them up. And as they come up, sometimes a whole bunch of other ones get released automatically that we don't really even have to recognize, but there's a cascading effect. And eventually the ego does not want you to know this, but eventually you run out of them. The obstacles are limited. There may be a bunch of them, but they are finite. And once we start to really resolve them and let them up, now nothing from our past has a grip on us. We really set ourselves free to the infinite nature of the healed mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, healing takes so much time. So I know, like, from my own experience, when I was going through some issues with my body, I thought I would go see a massage therapist and I'd be okay after, you know, two or three times. But literally, it's been 9 months and I'm still working on it. Like, there's still things that are coming up and it's a constant practice. And so it's not something that can happen overnight, but the journey has taught me so much about myself, and the release of that stress has given me back a part of me that I had lost, right? It's like a reconnection to the self. And so it's a powerful thing. If you're willing to put in the time and, you know, face it, it's difficult, but it's so worth it. It's hard to explain. It can feel so difficult, but when you're through it, when you get through it and you face those things, then you feel unstoppable.
Yes. Lisa, go back to the point. Can you remember the point in time in your life where you made a decision? You made some sort of decision that said, I want a better way. I want something different because such and such just isn't working for me. Do you remember a point where that occurred for you?
Absolutely. It was last summer or around this time, actually, when I decided to leave my life and start over. It was like I was craving something more. There was something more for me because none of that was working. And so I literally packed a backpack, grabbed my laptop, the podcast set, and I slept on a little mattress in this little space for a while until I figured out where I was going to live. And so it was like a whole undoing. And so I literally just lived through all of this stuff that you're talking about is the sitting with it and the healing aspect of things. But it was incredibly scary, and uncertainty is so powerful and it can really like take you back. But I made the leap and I was like, there's no turning back.
Yes. I don't think it was the uncertainty that was powerful. The uncertainty is scary and it seems to have a grip. What was powerful was your uncompromising decision. You were willing to sleep on a cot. You were willing to do with far less because you were basically refusing to go back to the prior way.
Yeah,
me too. I have my own story like that. And I could ask you that question in confidence because of what you were saying. I knew there had to be a turning point. There always is. And that point for us is where we say to ourselves, I'm tired of this pain. I'm tired of doing the same thing over and over and not getting results. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of that. And eventually we get tired enough where we say, there must be a better way. And that is actually a prayer. It's a deep prayer that that will get answered. And sometimes it's a little scary, it's a little frightening going through it. Like you said, you know, I didn't know where this was going. I was sleeping in a strange situation. I didn't know where this was going, but I trusted the process. I trusted my heart and I knew everything was going to be okay on some level. And voila, here you are. And here we are talking about it, you know, and you're in a position where you're helping other people now.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's those challenging times that propel us into the most, like, the best times, right? I'm forever grateful for that. And I think it's really sad that a lot of people are stuck in situations that they can't get out of, and I'm not discounting that. But there is ways, like we're talking about, there's little shifts. And so when I was going through my change, I guess I just made a promise to myself that I would be consistent in my practice. And if I practiced breathing or something every single day, that I was moving the needle just a little bit. And it was those little changes that were going to add up over time to make the biggest ones. And so I just kept going forward and not judging anything. And just, you know, it's like survival, you know, just that full trust that this is the path.
Yes, full out trust. Yeah, trust is the precursor for any life-changing path like that. And because we're being asked at that level, the healed mind is reaching in. It's like we get enough pain, we get enough stuff that we are tired of dealing with, where we open up our mind, a little crack. You know, it was Leonard Cohen that said, cracks are how the light gets in. There's a little crack and the healed mind comes in and just says, I got you. Trust, listen to me. I'm going to guide you along. That guidance comes from gut feelings, heartfelt feeling, you know, like somebody could hand you $1 million in that moment. You just say, no, this is my destination because no thanks. I'd just be right back on that treadmill and I want to get off it.
Yeah. 1000%. If someone listening takes one thing from this conversation, what is the most important thing that you want to relay to the audience today?
Less is more. It just is. You know, I mean, thank you, Lisa, for sharing so much about your story. You know, you like for me, I experiment with instead of like in my early 40s and certainly my 20s, you know, I'd go running up the hill, panting like a dog, you know, and getting all sweaty and come back. And yeah, okay, it feels good, but I wasn't really going anywhere. It's the treadmill. So now instead, I go slow. I just walk up the hill, step by step, breathing only through my nose. Peace is the goal. And with peace is the goal, that crack that lets in the light just starts to open and open and open. And pretty soon it becomes a chasm. And pretty soon, that peaceful self and the amazing guidance and light that comes with it is all we know. And guess what? That's all we have to know, because it always has our back. And it's with that that we aim to join. Remember, yoga joins. That's the definition of it. And as we, it is our yoga to work through the stuff so that we can join with that presence that's peaceful and whole, totally content. And so it's why the great mystics and the greatest sages of our time were not triathletes. They weren't running to the top of the mountain.
They literally sat in the Buddhist colony and like stare at the wall.
That's right. I need do nothing, because it would be insane. It would be a contradiction in terms if I started running around. And so now here we are, we catch ourselves running around, we catch ourselves pushing and over breathing and over thising and over thatting. You just say, wait a minute, nothing has to change. Keep going to your yoga classes, keep going to it, but let each time be a little different. Let it be a little less, and watch the doors and watch the window to the healed mind just open up more and more. So that has been my MO personally now for about 5 years. It was, I would say it so often in class, I realized I was saying it to myself. Let a little be a lot. That's what I would say. Let a little be a lot. And now, about the last 4 or 5 years, it's the message from spirit for me has been even more still than that. And the message is, you need do nothing. So at the ultimate level,
that,
we need
to. I 100% agree with you. And I'm really trying to focus on that and train myself to wholeheartedly live in coherence that way. But the ego steps in and society steps in, and they have so many demands of us. And it's really hard to live that way. But I truly believe exactly what you do, that real success is peace and happiness. And it's in the doing of nothing. Favorite times in my whole entire life have been over this past few months of healing and just laying on my bed and like feeling bliss on a level I've never felt before, because I'm so connected to my body. And it's like every drug I did in my 20s doesn't even compare to that.
Right.
Feeling of like full connection. And I know I was making that joke. My 20-year-old self would make fun of me right now if I said I was laying here breathing and just like felt the biggest high of my life. But it is true. And most people outsource their power to everyone else, but the healing is within us. And we have to remember that.
Couldn't say it better, Lisa. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here, Jeff. Tell us more about your yoga and where people can find more information about it.
Well, it's avitayogaonline.com. I teach 3 classes a week, a 30-minute, 45-minute, and 60-minute class. I've been teaching these classes now for over 10 years. I have these different playlists, and there's enormous amount of variety. I do have green classes and orange classes. And the difference is, orange classes can be a little more muscularly demanding. Sometimes we hold shapes a little bit longer. There might be a little more complexity to them, but the fundamentals are always the same. Less is more. Start deep, go slow, discover what healing sensation is all about, and the path to the healed mind that then gets reflected through the body and into your life is the miracle and the witness and the joy to what we're really looking for. AvitaYogaOnline.com, and you can pick up Mobility for Life, my latest book, on all the major sources, Amazon.com and all that. You can find Mobility for Life. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me. What a joy to share. I find the joy in sharing much more than promoting.
Absolutely. It's the connection piece. Thank you so much for being here and for giving so much of what you learned to the audience for them to take and learn themselves. So what a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Okay. Thank you.
And to our audience, thank you so much for being here. We will have Jeff's info in the show notes so you can have access to his yoga studio and his book. And so as Jeff teaches through Avita Yoga, when breath and movement start working together, not against each other, the body can finally begin to move the way it was designed to. And according to him, and I have to agree, it's a lot less than we're used to. Stay tuned for the next episode as we dive deeper into the body and learn more from Jeff on his yoga and way of living. Until next time, take care, everyone.